Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So it's Roger Federer against Novak Djokovic in the men's singles final here at Wimbledon. And Matt Roberts is here. Hello, Matt.
Hello, David.
Catherine Whittaker's here. Hello, Catherine.
Hello.
And, oh, well done. This is how close
Catherine
we are to the end.
Impersonator.
Oh, we're already going to get chucked out. Well, the good news is, folks, yeah, we will make our way to the exit gates in about 40 minutes. The good news about everybody being chucked out is that the very loud people having a picnic about three tables down are being chucked out, leaving us on our own, which is fantastic. First of all, Catherine, how's the sting?
The swelling has gone down. I have taken some antihistamine, and as far as I know, I've not been dropped from my presenting gig over the weekend due to an unbroadcastable face.
That's what I've heard.
So,
yeah.
And mission accomplished.
And she's wearing a massive net over her head at the moment, just in case another wasp tries to try its luck. Now, we have a very special guest with us here on the Tennis Podcast this evening. We had Mary Carrillo with us yesterday. And for a very first time, we have the WTA insider and a co-host of the NCR Tennis Podcast, Courtney Nguyen. Hello, Courtney.
I'm following Carrillo? You didn't tell me this?
this is
tough. Now,
that's
but,
how good
hello,
we think
folks.
You are.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
It's a joy to have you with us, though. It's lovely. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We're almost towards the end. We got two pretty big finals lined up. And, you know, as much chaos and kind of not, I mean, it wasn't a chaotic tournament, actually. That's not probably true. But obviously, some of the big storylines, we really didn't know how the second week was going to play out. Mm. And as it turned out, it's two pretty great four people in over the weekend. So I can't complain about
no,
it.
No, actually, I think if you were to, at the outset of the tournament, mark down what you would like in the finals, you'd probably pretty much go for this, wouldn't you?
Or what you might expect to see in the finals, David.
Yeah.
Oh, look at the look in her eye.
Catherine has got 2 out of 2.
She hasn't got
4 out of 4.
You're joking.
No.
Did you really? Mm. You got Serena Simona. That is impressive. That is a good pull right there.
Yeah.
Wow, I seed my WTA insider tag
how many slams
to Catherine,
been,
honestly.
Throwing stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks with predictions. Well, some of it has stuck.
Look at the look on her face. Courtney, you know, this is what we get.
I'm stunned. Oh. I'm stunned. I don't think Serena and Simona were picking themselves to be in the final on Saturday. So, I mean, props to you. Mega props.
I heard you get a percentage of the prize money as a result of this. So,
let's make it happen. Like yeah. The Nishikori underarm serve.
Indeed. Well, yeah, that's it.
Well, we've done that.
Yeah, speak things
exactly.
into truth.
Yeah.
Speak them into truth.
One
it's
for
important.
One there. Right. Well, let's talk about today. First of all, I think Roberto, much as we love him, and Novak are going to have to wait just a minute because we've just finished Roger Federer against Rafael Nadal, episode 40, and it has been won by Roger Federer in 4 sets. I've just commentated on it for BBC Radio, and I personally find it really quite hard to assess how good a match is when I've commentated on it. I come off commentary and I'm a bit lightheaded, really. I don't remember that much of it until I go and see it again. So you three are going to have to tell me what sort of match it was, because I mean, I kind of have my sense of what it was like, but.
Well, Courtney, what were you watching?
Oh, dear. I was a little bit late to the supposed match of the day because I had 2 other matches of the day that I was occupied with. But yes, I started the first set watching the Ostapenko mixed doubles.
Oh, well.
Out on number one court.
I can understand that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you had an opportunity to just sit quietly and watch Yelena Ostapenko go batting practice at dudes, you'd do it too.
Did she
it's
hurt
weirdly
her?
Cathartic.
Did she hurt her own partner today?
She didn't. He hurt himself. He had to take a medical timeout to help. help his hip, which is odd because Yelena Ostapenko was the one doing all the work carrying the team. So I don't know how he hurt that hip, but somehow she was able to kind of lift them up just with herself, with her big shot making, and she put on a clinic. I mean, it sounds funny to say based on, you know, where her tennis is these days on the singles court, but she put on a forehand clinic, she put on a backhand clinic, she served it out with an ace, she had some incredible net reactions, and was incredibly Yelena Ostapenko the whole time. So it was genuinely uplifting to just watch all that go down. So I had to finish that out before finally turning my attention to center court.
Just to be clear, so what is the mixed doubles final? Who is it?
The mixed doubles final is Lindstedt and Ostapenko against Chan and Doddig.
Oh, I mean, I'm going to watch that now.
It's going to be good.
Just had the big write-up there. Okay, so we know that. What happened in your eyes in Roger Federer against Rafael Nadal? How good was it? What was the feeling watching it?
Well, Matt and I were just saying before we came on air, while you were fetching the beers, David, that I think actually it's quite difficult for everyone to accurately assess how good it was, because I think the brilliance of the closing moments, closing minutes, closing 20, 30 minutes obscures the whole match. It was the final stages of that match were so good, it eclipses everything that went before it. And what went before wasn't bad at all. It was also brilliant in patches, but it was all about those last 20 minutes.
You do get that, don't you, from time to time?
And that is the way you want it. You want to leave a match thinking it was great because you've just seen something brilliant right at the end. So it was good to have that great climax. But the first three sets were kind of a little bit like some of their other Grand Slam matches of recent past, where they've each been playing well, but not necessarily at the same time. And I think we certainly saw that in the first 2.5 sets, where Federer was really good in the first set, Nadal was clinging on a little bit more, trying to fend off a few break points that Federer created. Then the second set, Federer went walkabout, and then it didn't actually...
He tanked.
It was a strategic tank.
He Kyrgios'd, as I was telling my friend. He pulled in a Kyrgios and said, you know what, that took a lot out of me, that first set, which was very tight and I thought was really great. Then took the foot off the gas pedal in the second set and then just put it back on in the second. I mean, the third and fourth, what, he made 6 unforced errors combined in the third and fourth sets, which is unbelievable. But I totally agree with Catherine's assessment. You come out of it on a high, but you kind of forget that maybe for 2 hours of that, it was kind of just rolling through and kind of waiting for something to happen. And luckily something did in the final.
He did have chances at the start of that second set because he was really coming on strong and middling the ball, and he had 2 break points. The moment he didn't take them, and he didn't take them by hitting backhands halfway up the net, as though his timing just evaporated. And I didn't quite understand why, but he didn't win another game after that.
I tweeted... Do you remember when Federer's backhand was a weakness against Nadal? And then, literally, the next 5 minutes, Federer spent the whole time making backhand unforced errors, and everyone was coming at me saying, oh, this tweet aged well, didn't it? But, yeah, when I was watching that second set, tanking didn't come to mind initially. I just thought he'd, like, completely lost his game. And then when he was...
It was only the last game, really, that he just decided on 5-1 down, he did a sabre. Yeah. When was the last time you saw him do a sabre, right? The old sneak attack.
I don't think he's ever done one on centre.
Other people are doing sabres now.
Yeah.
He's over them.
And then he actually did a return, which he was almost like a forward defensive stroke in cricket, where he just sort of stubbed it into the ground and then just walked off.
He can... play cricket, can't he?
But he basically did.
You see him hit cover drives in practice sometimes.
His mum's
maybe he's excited
South African,
about Sunday,
right?
Yeah.
He's played a bit, yeah.
Okay, so that one went away in about 20 minutes. I was commentating on that. Thinking, you know, and as a commentator, you're thinking, I hope I get a really good set. And then I suddenly got that load of rubbish.
Were you thinking during the commentary, can I say that he's tanking this? Because I thought you were implying it, and then Tony Livesey, the presenter, came in between sets, and his role is the kind of the observer, the outside observer,
the
everyman, the non-expert, and he plays it brilliantly. And he just went, David Federer's just tanked away that set. What happened?
Yeah.
And it was
I was quite happy to say he was not trying at the end there because he's conserving energy for the next set.
And smart, I think.
Match management. Your goal is not to win every point. Your goal is not to win every game. And your goal is not to win every set. Your goal is to win the match. Just like in a tournament, your goal is to win the tournament. I mean, you know, it's this weird
If you just written Bernard Tomic's appeals letter.
Well, there you go. Anna's really, but sure. We'll go with Tomic.
If only he was that articulate.
Exactly. But I do think this. I think that sometimes, you know, this sport, it's very easy to do it, and we want to do it because we're so passionate about the sport, we want to sell the sport, is that we end up lionizing things that maybe we shouldn't be, and that we end up mythologizing things that we shouldn't be. And this romantic ideal of, you know, like when you look at the how Rafa is spoken about, which is 100% accurate, never takes a point off, tries every single time, hard on his sleeve, you know, all that sort of stuff. Great. That's great for him. It's not great for everybody else. And it does, you know, we don't allow for the nuance in how this sport is meant to be played and how it has to be played nowadays by a 37-year-old out there who is playing a guy who doesn't take points off. Maybe I'm going to take a point off to conserve myself for two sets.
And when he came off court and did the flash interview with Lee McKenzie, her first question was very general, you know, how are you feeling? And the first thing he said was, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that physical a match. I mean, it was... Of course it was quite physical. It was Federer against Nadal, but
stressful.
It wasn't physical exhaustion. It was nerves frayed, 3 hours, 3 minutes of stress that was pouring out in the sweat.
My sense was the only time they played well at the same time was the start of set four. And I felt like that they were both just swinging for the hills, partly because Nadal knows it's now or never. You know, he hasn't got any more in the budget. And
but
Federer
I also think... Sorry. I also think for Federer it was now or never, because in a fifth, you're absolutely going for Nadal. I think that was the perfect balance. You always want Federer to be ahead in the score for the sake of the match, because you don't think Federer can do it in five, certainly not against Nadal.
Mm. The nerves that you describe... He top-edged a smash into the opposite of the raw box, the other end. You know,
I
mean, it was an absolute. I've never seen him do that. I've seen him shank a million balls, but never on a smash like that. And what was that? I can't remember where that was to go, but
that was
in the score.
Serving for the match about 15 all, something like that. It was right towards the end, and he'd already had a couple of match points in the previous game on Nadal's serve, which he hadn't taken. And he'd done this remarkable act of self-sabotage with the
Hawkeye. That's amazing.
When Nadal had hit this serve, which Federer had just completely nailed the return, but almost just after he had hit the return, before realising how good of a return it was, he said, challenge. And then almost these things were all happening at the same time. He said, challenge, and Nadal hit the ball in the net. And if Federer hadn't said challenge, he would have won the point.
And it would have been match point.
And it would have been match point. And then the serve was in, so Federer had lost the point. It was just this sort of crazy theatre and drama that was going on in the last two games.
They both ended it with no challenges remaining, didn't they?
Oh,
it's an amazing,
amazing
advertisement for our podcast.
Have you ever seen that, where they both had no challenges remaining?
We've seen it a few times, but definitely not between these two. That was pretty surprising. And I did love, I don't know if you saw Anne Kyanthavong's tweet after that moment where she said, Fed, always trust in James. her brother, obviously, James Kyanthavong in the chair for that match.
Who was just nailing calls.
He's a stud. He's an absolute stud.
But I don't know about you, but maybe this was part of the reason you named the podcast what you did. But the moment that James said, there's something slightly morose about the way they say,
precisely right.
Mr. Federer has no challenges remaining. And you go, oh.
It was when they said it about Nadal that it felt
Federer's
particularly
bad
morose.
At challenging.
Nadal, your challenge is over.
Federer's not in the top 100 for challenges.
No.
He's appalling.
He's just above Tsitsipas, who is the worst.
Ooh, he's very, very
he
bad.
He's terrible.
Stefanos.
So this final game, five match points. I mean, I've spoken to a couple of people now. The common agreement appears to be if Federer doesn't win that game, he may well not be winning that match.
For me, there were similarities, not in terms of the tennis, but in exactly what you've just said, to Andy Murray trying to serve it out in 2013.
Exactly.
He's two sets to love up. He's, I think, 5-3. And yet he now, by his own admission, said, if I didn't win that game, which had about five juices in it, I think he said, I think it could have all...
And it
could have all gone wrong.
And especially because in that Murray final, he had dominated the match. I mean, the scoreline, when I think back on how I felt watching that final game, and then I see what the score line was. It's like, why the heck was everybody stressing out? Like, you know, I mean, he was totally in control. But in that moment, it didn't feel like he was. And given all the momentum, you know, everything in the moment and what was at stake that had Novak broken, that you're like, oh, yeah, this is going to go south in five. And that's a little bit of what we kind of thought a little bit, you know, today as well, because Roger was rolling along and that those final two sets never really felt in danger. Yeah, okay, maybe a break point here or there, but nothing massive. The momentum hadn't shifted entirely. But with the shank, the overhead shank, and then, you know, everything that had been conspiring against him in those last about 15, 20 minutes, you felt like, okay, if he doesn't get over the line, everything, this match is now officially flipped on its head.
Do we think Nadal will have regrets tonight? I mean, sometimes you lose and you just say, okay, fair enough, that guy was amazing, but will he have regrets?
I mean, based on what he was saying in his press conference, he basically said, look, I wasn't hitting the ball well today. And that was my problem. I wasn't feeling the ball. I couldn't hit the ball. You can't beat Roger with pace. You have to get him out of position and put him in awkward positions. I couldn't do that because I wasn't hitting a clean ball. If I'm Rafa, which I'm absolutely not, because we do not think the same way at all, I will not try on every single point. But to me, that makes it a little bit easier. Like you go home and you think, you know what, I didn't have it today. And that's really frustrating. Yeah. And the opportunity was massive. And I'm going to rue the missed opportunity to make a Wimbledon final because I know that these opportunities are not always there. But I don't think I did anything necessarily wrong with what I had. Mm. And you can't, I mean, if he's the type of person that's going to rue, did I mess something up before that? To put myself in this position to not perform as well as I wanted to, then that's different. But when you don't have it, you don't have it. But it's not a mental decision that you made wrongly. I mean, it's a sport. Mm.
What I thought was really interesting today was Federer won more of the long rallies. Like, I mean, how just against the narrative is that? That Federer was winning the long rallies against Nadal, who has dominated him in those exchanges like their whole career. But I think, you know, I picked Nadal to win today, but I overlooked how clear the strategy is now in Federer's mind when he plays Nadal. Now that he's improved his backhand, he can go toe-to-toe with Nadal from the baseline. He can push him out wide the way that Djokovic almost does with his backhand, and then kind of take over with his forehand, come forward. All these things are clear for Federer now. He's not thinking, how do I beat this guy? He knows now. He just has to execute. And he did in all the key moments today. Mm.
Yeah, and I think that the big thing about that is that when we look back on their rivalry earlier on, when everything was so slanted towards Rafa and away from Roger, it wasn't that Roger was not as good of a tennis player. And yes, okay, there's matchup problems, obviously. Exactly what you were saying, Matt. Like, he didn't know how to play. The doubt would creep into his mind, and the decision making was always a little bit suspect when he played Rafa, and that was what was unsettling, and that would lead to the shanks and the terrible breakpoint conversion and all these sorts of things. Now, five straight wins, you know, over that stretch of time that he had, and played him really good in a hurricane just a few weeks ago. I mean, you know, wasn't close to getting the win, but played him incredibly well. I think that that's the thing, is that he knows now the doubt is gone. And it's just about executing. Mm-hmm. He couldn't execute in Paris because of a variety of different reasons. And maybe the surface still gives Rafa the edge. But here, I agree with you. He, from the first point, he looked like he knew exactly how he wanted to play Rafa.
Do you think Rafa was annoyed that he wasn't able to prove the Wimbledon seeding policy wrong?
I think it's one of many. There was so much at stake today. You know, he can't close it to one slam now. He may still get away with it because old Novak might come in and do his thing, but you know, there was a lot on the line
today. Then Djokovic will be on his heels. Would he rather win?
This is what I was asking a Rafa fan today. Is who do you root for if it's Novak and Federer? Do you say okay, look, I'm never going to catch you, but gosh darn it to heck, that guy can catch me. Or do you say, no, but I still believe that I can catch you, so I'm not worried about the guy behind me?
What's the answer?
They didn't know. I'm still waiting for a text back.
Okay. Right. We'll check in with you later.
It's like one of those, you know, lateral thinking puzzles. Yeah. And, oh my gosh.
To no win.
The thing is, my family taunted
me. To me, I don't want the guy to catch me.
But just
But I think that's why we're not champion tennis players. Yes. I would be worried about the guy behind as well. Yeah. But I think they're looking at the guy in front.
Up top.
But just after the French Open, a high five
here between the tennis podcast and the NCR tennis podcast.
Good radio.
But just after the French Open, weren't we saying that Nadal could overtake Federer's just in terms of French Opens? Like, the rest of the slams, still relevant, but as long as he can keep playing the French and still be full pelt at the French, he could catch him just with the French Open. Like, let's not forget what happened a month ago and how he just dominates that tournament.
So Federer's got to go and win his Wimbledons. I mean, you know, it's hilarious, isn't it? Oh, I'll tell you what, yeah, you might win that one, but I'm going to win on my turf. That's
fine. And the fact that this conversation is happening now in 2019, again, a conversation I was having earlier today where somebody said, you know, the big three have had it easier now than they have ever had it.
Yes.
And I was, and I thought about it. I was like, gosh darn it, you might be right. Because to me, like, you know, you rewind it 5-7 years ago, you still had the Tsongas, the Burdicks, the Ferrers, these stoppers, these consistent top teners that were in there and that were great. And they still were in the mix. I mean, you know, you're looking at the average, what is it, the average ranking of these guys when they got into the semis. I mean, it was dire across the board.
And also, I think Andy Murray being out for 2 years has had a big impact on that. Like, there's been no one, even if Murray's ranking was a bit down, he might take them out in the quarters or something like that, but he's not even been around, and Del Potro has had his injuries. Like, it does feel like they have it easier now than they did a couple of years ago.
You also lopside the draw, which is what happened obviously here, is that when you had the four, it was all good. And that was a four back when people were still making fun of Andy Murray being part of the four. Like, oh, no, it's a 3+4. Wherever Andy lands, everybody's happy. But now you have a gaping hole in that four spot.
Yeah.
And that leads to some wacky draws for sure.
So talking of the other draw, Novak Djokovic was a bit ratty today, wasn't he? He was in a right old mood out there for the first couple of sets. He managed to beat Roberto Bautista Agut, who I tried to get the nickname The Robot going for, and it didn't seem to take off. In fact, I put the vote on it, and 65% said no. Catherine Whittaker was absolutely adamant that I should shut up.
You test audienced it on us, and we both said absolutely not. And then you went to desperation in Twitter.
I was trying to get
a flailing last
trying to get week. It over the line, but it didn't happen.
And then Simon Briggs came back with Roboto Bautista Agut.
I know, he was trying to big me up.
And then Brad Gilbert put you away.
All right. Brad Gilbert blocked me on Twitter a few years ago for having a go at his nicknames.
Oh, fantastic.
Which and then Catherine got me unblocked by being a peacemaker. So that was
all
good.
Olive branches. This is tremendous work.
Yeah, although I suspect
I have a few that you can iron out for me, Catherine, if you'd like.
I may be behind the wall
the
again.
The podcast ambassador.
I don't think I act these are as not a your Twitter fights. Peacemaker these anymore.
Right, so yes, they split the first two sets today, and Djokovic seemed to be getting... I haven't seen his press conference transcript. He seemed on court to be getting really fed up at the crowd, going for his opponent, you know, bigging him up. And
he did some sarcastic applause.
Yeah, he did the whole... He got broken and then did the whole waving to the crowd, like, that's right, get louder. And
He's not going to like Sunday.
To be fair... This is the Novak Djokovic I personally love.
Mm. Oh, yeah,
is the
me
one
too.
That just embraces the edge, that embraces the bad guy.
Pissed off Novak Djokovic
is the best.
Way
I agree.
The best.
What I hope to hear from... I didn't go to his press conference. What I hope is that he owned that in press.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he was asked about it. I agree with you. I don't mind that. I would be pissed off if I was out there as the world number one and everyone was cheering for bloke across the net that probably half that crowd had never heard of. I would be really pissed off. And I want him to own that in press and say, yeah, I was pissed.
What was your sense, Matt, from what you heard?
My sense was that he just said, oh... He was the underdog, it's usual, that kind of thing.
That is true. Mm. It's just the way it is. I mean, that having been said, if it had been Federer or Nadal against Bautista Agut, it would have been less than that. Mm. It just would have been.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the what you have to give huge credit to Djokovic for, I think, is that he has these episodes and he comes through them. He finds a way to win anyway.
And I think he uses them to his own advantage. Like, he needed something in that match to change the match because Bautista Agut was trading with him, frustrating him. He needed some kind of spark from somewhere and he kind of used the crowd to get himself energized a little bit in a way. And Bautista Agut played well, but Djokovic, while not playing his absolute best, just managed to find a level that was too good for him.
Federer has never beaten Djokovic when he's had this absolutely raging crowd behind him. That's two Wimbledon finals, and there's that US Open final, which was deeply uncomfortable. And each one of them, Djokovic just stared Federer down, stared the 20,000 people down and said, come on then.
I think it's
when he's the best.
It could be uncomfortable on Sunday, I think. Except that how uncomfortable do the cucumber sandwich eating
I mean, to be honest, no,
that's why you got to get the queue people in.
They had their moments in 2014. They really did.
But it was, as you say, you singled out that US Open final. It is different.
That was the worst.
Yeah,
I mean, that was the worst. But he beat him anyway. So it'll be fascinating.
What I'm saying is I don't think they'll be cheering Djokovic's double faults
in
the way they were.
Which was, it's just
we're a little bit different across the pond. Slightly so. It's okay. Happy to say it. Happy to embrace it. But we are. We take great pleasure in a little bit of needling. And so does Novak Djokovic. I mean, I think that when he embraces it, when he owns it, it's always what I wanted from him from 2006 was... go and be the bad guy. Go break up this duopoly at the top. Own it. You're never... I mean, people are just not going to like you, and it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Because you've come along third.
The fan base is split. Yeah. There's no one to come to you.
Like, good hunting.
Yeah. Just own it. Go in and just put your head down it and be that guy. And, you know, and to his credit, he's done the ambassadorial thing, and, you know, credit to him for it. But just me personally, the Novak that I like is the one that slaps that forehand return against Roger at the US Open final and is like, bring it. Like, you know, like, I love that guy. Yeah, that guy's cool.
Me too. What do you think is going to happen in the final, Courtney? I personally need 24 hours on this. Having got Roger Federer right in four sets.
Oh, my.
Hang on. Nothing's changed since yesterday when you correctly predicted Federer would win this one in four.
Yeah.
And then you in tandem predicted Federer would win the final against Djokovic. So yeah. Nothing's changed.
Well, I didn't ask you. Courtney.
I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say the number one player in the world is probably going to win that match. I don't think that Roger's ever beaten them both in a slam, Rafa and Novak. I think that this effort took a lot, both mentally, maybe not as much physically, but he's still 37, and that does matter, and the recovery is going to matter. I think Novak, again, has just... the thing that that always impresses me the most about Novak is his ability to manage a tournament. So he never seems to put in more than 1 ounce extra of effort to get the win that he needs. And it might not be the most efficient of wins. It might go four. Sometimes it's three. But it's... today against Roberto Bautista Agut, I was not impressed really with the Novak that I saw. I thought that it was very contained and he wasn't hitting big and he was just kind of just playing this very conservative level, and he dominated the match. So he's managed his tournament better. Less has been asked of him compared to Roger. So I'm going to go ahead and give the edge to him.
And I think there are some parallels with 2015 for Federer when you just put in that divine performance to beat Murray.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone was thinking, okay, he's playing the best tennis, he's going to win. And then he comes up against Djokovic and suddenly you realise that Djokovic is able to put Federer in more uncomfortable spots and do things to Federer that others can't do. And I think Federer wasn't completely divine today against Nadal, but he had his moments where he was right at the top of his game, and it can be easy to get swept up by that.
Yes.
But he has found that formula against Nadal. Don't think he's found it against Djokovic. I mean, when was the last time he beat him over five sets? I want to say it was here in 2012. It's been a long time since he's beaten Djokovic over five sets.
Yeah, in 2012, actually, that was and it was a four-set win
in the semis.
Yeah, I remember doing that match, and then Federer played Murray in the final and beat him. Okay, right. Well, all I wanted to ask Catherine is does anything you've seen today change your view in any way? I mean, yes, I've gone out on a limb and I've said my thing, Federer, whatever. But does anything change?
Well, yes and no, because exactly as Courtney and Matt have just pointed out, I was completely swept up in Federer's performance today and slightly underwhelmed by Djokovic's. But as Courtney very eloquently explained there, that doesn't really mean anything.
No.
In the final, and that comparison with 2015, and that I remember being swept up with Federer's victory over Murray in that semi-final, and you do get swept up with his performances, and tennis is about matchups. So
and the day,
and the day, and so although if I am the elected person that predicts everything correctly this tournament,
what?
Which is,
might as well get it out there.
Okay.
I get into truth.
I said Federer beat Djokovic before the tournament, but I hadn't looked at that record of Federer never having beaten
first
the
time
other
for everything.
Two. First time and at 37.
And yeah. he hasn't had a huge number of opportunities where he's had to play them both back to back.
True. Which... True. Okay.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Rightio, that's the men's singles final. Tomorrow we have the women's singles final between Serena Williams going for Grand Slam title number 24 in the singles. She's got, 39 if you factor in the doubles and the mixed doubles, against Simona Halep, which is... has been correctly predicted by Catherine, which I find extraordinary.
I do too. But
Courtney, from your vantage point, Simona Halep, Wimbledon finalist, is that something you thought you would ever see? I mean, obviously she's an excellent player. Catherine had let us know that Daniel Dobre, her coach, was sort of targeting Wimbledon, yeah. which is interesting in itself. But I mean, did you see this coming at all from your...
This year, I it didn't cross my mind. I've always been much bigger and more confident probably in Simona's prospects at Wimbledon than she and I were joking about it before, than she is. Like she, you know, I think that if you make a Wimbledon semifinal, which she did in 2014, she rolled her ankle against Eugenie Bouchard. That moment has always been for me the sliding doors moment on the WTA tour, because I think that Simona wins that match against Jeannie. I think that a final against Petra is very different, even though we saw how Petra played and everything, but I just think that it was a moment there. When you look at Simona and you look at her career and you follow it closely, she wins on all the surfaces. I mean, there's a very good argument to be made that she should have won the 2015 US Open. She lost to Panetta in the semifinals and would have played Vinci. That was the big calendar slam run with Serena. She very easily could have won the Australian Open last year. Caroline Wozniacki took that medical timeout late in the third set and basically froze Simona. Her body just didn't recover after that. 2017, if she doesn't get Ostapenko'd the way that Ostapenko'd, you know, that's another one. I mean, we're talking about somebody who really could be a 3-4-time major champion by now. And so when it comes to grass, I mean, she had a title in Sertogenbosch. I looked up her results and I was like, oh, you've pretty much made quarterfinals and semifinals of like 80% of the grass events that you've played. It was just in her head. In her head, she didn't feel stable. She didn't feel safe on the grass, and that's all changed here. And I talked to a Romanian reporter as well before I saw your tweet about the interview with Daniel Dobre, having him saying that we're targeting Wimbledon. But my Romanian friend was saying the same thing. He spoke to Dobre back in March, or not March, but after Miami, so it would have been April. And he said the same thing then. He said, "I think she can win Wimbledon. I think that she can do it." So, you know, that's a great adjustment for her. But it, just in general, she's, I think, coming out of the French Open, and as she said, nobody died. I didn't defend my title. It was fine. Like, it was, you know, it's chilled. And just finally letting that go. She came in here under the radar. Nobody's talking about her. You know, Coco Gauff takes all of the oxygen out of the room in the first week, which I think also helped Serena. I think it also helped Simona. I think it helped a lot of top players. Mm. And then they just get down to business in the second week of the tournament. And I was thoroughly impressed by her performance against Svitolina. So I'm not surprised to find her in a Wimbledon final, because I've always believed that she could win this title if the draw broke her way and a few other things. But I didn't necessarily think it was going to happen this year.
Yeah. So you mentioned you feel that Coco Gauff has helped Serena. Obviously, you know, just somebody else to take the attention, etc. we reckon that Sir Andy helped.
Yes.
Serena as well. Yeah. You know, having another event to play, get some form in, and you know, something to just smile about.
And really. She said that in every press conference. She said how much the mixed has helped her game and
the
her
mentality.
Sort of feeling.
I mean, it made it a light tournament.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, normally when Serena comes to an event, whether it's a slam or a tour level event, it's heavy. Because you feel like, I don't know, the whole tenor of the event changes. You feel like it, not that it all of a sudden matters anymore, because that's absolutely not what I'm saying, but she just has this aura and this energy that shifts, you know, kind of the landscape when she's there. Here, because you didn't have to spend a 10-minute press conference pestering her with questions with, how's your knee? How's your body? How you feeling? 24? Oh, you haven't had matches. It didn't have to be this negativity, because all the questions are going to be negative. You know, she hasn't played. This is now going to be, what, her 15th match of the year? 15th, 20th match of the year? Yeah. So, Sir Andy created this instance where you could ask her something fun, and you could still get a story, and it didn't have to be about the tennis. And Coco Gauff, you could ask her about Coco Gauff, and honestly, a lot of column space was being dedicated to Coco. So that also takes away the focus, and so she just went through the gears through the first week, and then once Halep beat Gauff, now we got to the business end of it, and things kind of picked up. But I think it was massive that both of those things, Coco and Sir Andy, kind of just helped just make it light, make it fun. You got to see Serena smile and giggle, and I've never seen her so happy in a press conference than when she was sitting next to Andy Murray.
And feel absolute adoration from the crowds here.
Absolutely.
Not just appreciation, which they all have, of course, but adoration. And these guys are human beings with egos, and they like to be loved.
Yeah, of course. So the final tomorrow, 9-1 is the head-to-head for Serena Williams. I still think she will just overpowers players if she's on. But what about this idea that Halep might do a Kerber from last year?
She could. Every single one of her Grand Slam finals Simona's played, the four previous ones have gone three sets.
They're always
Matt cottoned onto
this.
She's never
not shown up. She doesn't show up sometimes in matches.
But she does in Slam finals.
In Slam finals, she's always there.
She's the magic ingredient for a good Grand Slam final.
I mean, the best ones that we remember from Sharapova 2014 all the way through, they're always compelling. They're always great. Mm. Serena's different. She's closed the talent gap, though, there. Australian Open, the match they played in the round of 16 at the Australian Open this year, Simona basically had gone into that tournament barely practicing. She was out of shape. She knew it. Well, she was fit, but she hadn't been hitting very much. She had basically agreed with herself, I'm going to have a fun as heck time during my off season because I've earned it. And I'm just basically writing off the first 3 months of the season. She goes into that match. It's one of the best matches of the year. Nobody ever talks about it, but Serena Simona was great.
It was.
They played a great one at the Australian Open or US Open a few years ago, which was also a three-setter. I mean, she has this ability to force Serena to level up. I loved Serena's quote about how the most important thing about her 9-1 record against Simona was Simona's beating her at the WTA Finals in Singapore. She beat her 11-1.
Yeah.
And Serena said that I never forgot that.
Didn't they have a rematch?
They did, in the semis. That was in the group, and then they played in the semis, and Serena creamed her. But but she said, I never forgot that, and that showed me the level that she could play, and that I always have to be better than that. And it was one of those very... I mean, she said it calmly. I don't want to say it was menacing, but in my own personal interpretation, it was like, oh, damn! Like, she, Simona, you in trouble, girl. Like, that sort of thing. But
it's almost a bit Sharapova beating Serena when Sharapova was so young, and you know, Serena now knows I have to be on it to beat you,
and I want to beat you. And Saturday's final pits against each other the two best players of the last 5 years.
Mm.
If you talk about, I mean, we had this argument a bunch of us because I threw this out with a bunch of young journalists, and everybody's like, "Well, Kerber." I was like, "No, Kerber comes in and out." Simona was a top five player the entire time. She was a year-end number one when Serena was out, so for two straight years, she's the best player since Serena's been gone. So. you know, that consistency she'll bring, she'll swing freely. It's an amazing moment for her and her family. She said that her mom always dreamt of her being able to play a Wimbledon final. So she gets to check that one off the board. I think she'll bring it. And when it comes to the tennis, I mean, we all love contrasts and styles.
Yeah.
And that's what you're going to get there.
No, that'd be good. If you haven't heard Courtney on the WTA Insider podcast, you should go and have a listen, and also on her own podcast, NCR Tennis, with Ben Rothenberg. But Courtney works behind the scenes year round, creating content for the WTA, unearthing some cracking stories about all the players that we cover, and it's frankly an invaluable source of information. Are you allowed to do what we do, though, and start going predictions heavy and saying who's going to win this final? Because, I mean, if you can't, I accept it. But.
No, it's fine. I mean, I don't do it on behalf of the WT. Like, I don't put it on the website because then it's like players and agents. How dare you? It's a whole. So I told them when they first hired me, I'm not doing predictions. Not because I'm terrible at them, and they're fun.
Oh, pretty in the club, yeah.
Yeah, but I just don't want to get into fights with agents and players about, oh, you thought she was going to beat me and all that. But outside of the WTA website, I do them occasionally. I mean, I think it's going to be Serena, obviously. I think that with Kerber, the final against Kerber, there were already going to be question marks because Kerber had done it before. Kerber had beaten her in a slam final. There's a amount of respect there. And Kerber was a really good grass player, and we all kind of already knew that. So I was already kind of doubting that a little bit. Against Osaka, she hadn't been tested. There's a lot going on in that whole matchup between the two of them that is not about the tennis, and you just had to wait to see how it played out. Here, I've just been so impressed with her starting at the Gurgis match. Gurgis, she got up. Rematch of the semifinals in the third round, she played an unbelievable match. I mean, Gurgis didn't play badly at all. Blitz through Carla Suarez Navarro in the round of 16, as one would expect. Quarterfinals against Ali Risk. Up against it. Tested. Came up with the goods. That's what I needed to see from Serena, was that when you were under pressure, because you've been freaking out. That's the bottom line.
Even you go all the way back to that Vinci match. Yeah. I think that was the first time I really saw her in a match. Just
lose her tennis because her mind wouldn't let her convince her body to do what it needed to do, and so I was impressed with that. Obviously, semifinal, great match, great performance against Strizova. But I think that Risk match, the Gurgis match, those are the two where I thought, okay, this is a different one. Simona, she's never played her in a major final. Obviously, the 9-1 helps. I think that she knows what she needs to do against Simona, so I think the matchup is a little bit more comfortable.
How big will this be in America if she matches this record? Is it a really big deal on the sort of grander non-tennis scale?
I think that it is. I think that this is unfortunate for Serena, but I think there's a little bit of 24 fatigue.
Yeah.
That has happened, because this is now we're 13 months into it.
Mary talked about that.
Oh yeah,
yesterday.
Did she? Yeah.
Yeah, she said I'm ready for her to just win 24 now, and that story being over.
Let's move on, you know. So there's a little bit of that. It's obviously 8 a.m. East Coast time, the final tomorrow. So breakfast at Wimbledon, people have to kind of get up for it. But she is. I mean, it's hard to really articulate what Serena Williams means in America. You know, just as a figure that is bigger than the sport. I mean, we see her as a forehands and backhands, great. Everyone else in America sees her as something completely different. I mean, you know, when my friends talk to me about Serena, it's almost like we can't have a conversation because I'm so in the tennis world of it, and they're so much in the cultural, larger meaning world of it.
That she's a star, an icon,
an African-American icon, what she represents to the Black community in the States, what she represents to women in the States, what she represents to mothers in the States, all that, which for me in my role, I only see her as a tennis player because I all that other stuff, you know, so it's very jarring in that way. But the funniest thing is that if she hits 24 tomorrow, then it becomes the March to 25 to break the record in New York.
Yeah.
If she doesn't hit 24.
How good is that going to be?
That's going to be like, I mean, the most hype I have ever seen around tennis.
Was that she, right?
Well, I was going to say 2015.
Yeah.
US that, Open.
One of the two, yeah.
I've never seen anything going around New York.
She was two matches
year.
Away from the calendar slam, and that has
she
not
was,
been
and
done
she and a Panetta away from the calendar slam.
She was in Italy away from the calendar slam. And that's the most sort of blanket hype and coverage of a storyline of a player I have ever
seen. It was
and
a coronation.
It will kind of be, if she wins here tomorrow. Oh. It will kind of be that US Open again.
Yeah. I love Simona Halep, right, but I want to feel that hype. Don't you?
David Law, hype man.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be amazing.
The parades on the streets in Bucharest, though. They'll rival the ones in the Canyon of Heroes in New York.
Simona, as big as Serena is in America, Simona's number one.
Probably bigger in Romania than Serena is in America.
It's actually quite uplifting, I find. Yeah. That when she played that exhibition the other week, I was looking at those amazing pictures and there's absolutely packed indoor, I think it was an indoor stadium, and I was thinking, Where is that? What tournament's that? Which indoor slam final is she in?
Even in Bucharest. That was in Cluj, which is a little bit further away, and yet everybody came in. I mean, when I talked to the Romanian reporters to ask them, you know, please explain to me the cult of Simona Halep, because we see it in our numbers. I mean, if we read a Simona Halep story, she's probably our number one web driver, to be quite honest. Her, Osaka, Serena, but because Simona's playing consistently, it's like, it doesn't matter. You know, the Simona sneezes rule. Simona sneezes, you write an article, you know, and we all get paid. It's great. And I think, and the way that one of my friends described it was, Romania always obviously has a little bit of a tennis tradition. The young people, though, don't know the Tiriacs and the Ruzicis and the Nastasis and that area. So she's the first big star for the young Romanian fans. And because in the last Olympic cycle and World Cup cycles, no Romanian team in the World Cup, and the gymnasts did not perform very well in the last couple. So they were like, straight up, I said, who's the biggest sports star other than footballers, like, who's the biggest sports star in Romania? They're like, oh, Simona. It's like, okay, what about with footballers? They're like, no, it's still Simona. Like, there's no one even close. And for this little, you know, 5'4" introverted,
it's tennis
little
player.
Tennis player, it's kind of amazing. Yeah.
Did you see her quote about where she would prioritize an Olympic medal? Not an Olympic gold, an Olympic medal. She said, what did she say exactly, Matt?
She said it would be number one, right?
Absolute number one over a Grand Slam title of anything, an Olympic medal of any colour.
Yeah.
Aww. And that has to be to do with representing her country.
So I'm pumped about the US Open because of the Serena hype. And
now you want statues of Simona Halep all over the world.
Can't we have all these things?
Do you think she'll carry... I mean, I'm obsessed with the Olympics already, but do you think she might carry the Romanian flag?
That would be
flag?
Actually a really good call, is to have her. I mean, the only thing is that she skipped the last one in Rio because of Zika concerns. That's what was said, but but she has, I think, since checking off the boxes that were personal boxes, number one, year and number one, and Roland Garros specifically, now I think she has thought a little bit more outward. Her efforts for Fed Cup were monumental this year, trying to win that for Romania, and I think she still wants to do that. Now talking a lot more about the Olympics in Tokyo. So, you know, she's an interesting player to follow, just because it's hard to... I mean, it's easy to get into our mind a little bit, but I often wonder, we were talking about this yesterday, about is Simona Halep an underachiever or an overachiever? Two-time year-end world number one, one major, now five finals total. Doesn't really tally up there real high with titles. You know, Petra's won more in the last few years. Svitolina's won more in the last few years. But at the whole time, though, she was trying. It wasn't like she stand off Rinka and all of a sudden decided to, you know, I'm going to work really hard and try to, I believe that I'm a top five player. Like, she believed the whole time and just kept running up against
it. Not like him coming out of the bar and thinking, tell you what, I think next week I might try a bit, you know, get in the gym. Okay, well, I tell you, all of this sounds fantastic, so let's just look forward to it all. And meanwhile, we had today Barbora Strizova. Was that today?
Shay
Suway winning 7-6, 6-4 in the semifinals of the women's doubles, beating Tomea Babosh and Kristina Mladenovic.
I love how probably the most individualistic, is that a word, tennis player can be doing so well in doubles, like Shay. I love that she's found a partner in Strizkova who they can connect on this level in doubles, and it works.
And Barra lets her, like, celebrates the Shayness. Like, she's like, you do you. Like, please keep doing you. It's great.
I actually saw Shay in practice this morning going through some volley drills, and they made absolutely no sense to me at all. But, you know, I mean, most of her game doesn't. But anyway, well done to her. So who are they playing in the final? In that
they will be playing Dobrowski and Xu. Gabrielle Dobrowski Canada and Xu.
They beat the defending champions.
They
today,
did.
Right?
They beat the defending champions and Strytsova.
And
Shay beat Babush and Mladenovic, which means that if Strytsova and Shay win tomorrow, win the final, then Strytsova's number one.
Wow.
In doubles.
What a
But more importantly, it means that Barbara Strytsova and Shay Sue will be at the Champions Dinner.
Oh.
Which the Insta stories will be tremendous.
That would be good. Excellent. Okay. So I think that just about sums it all up today. It's been quite a day here at Wimbledon. I also know that there was a great wheelchair doubles win in the quads for Dylan Alcott and Andy Lapthorn. I just wanted to mention that they won 6-2, 7-6. I think that's the first time they've had that. Mm.
And then they're now going to play in the singles final, I think.
Yes, that's right. They're meeting in the singles final. So fantastic.
And that's the first time they've ever had quads.
Yeah. It is, yeah. That's right. And Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid reached the final of the wheelchair doubles as well. So, there's so much stuff happened today. It's hard to keep track, but it's been lovely having you with us here.
This was a pleasure. Absolute pleasure to talk to you guys about the tennis. We don't do it enough.
No, and it's been too long waiting for it, and we've now done it, and I've loved it. Catherine, don't get any stings on the way home or anything, because people have been worried, and they've been, you know, blaming me. And you seem all right there.
I had to send my mum an emergency text before the podcast went up going, I'm fine, yeah. Just to warn you though.
Because we're going to hear a scream.
Yeah.
We deliberately didn't
to hear some peril involving your daughter.
It was quite shocking at the time, and then I think a few of the listeners thought, oh my goodness.
The glee on David's face while he was editing.
Well, only once I realised you were okay. I'm not that bad.
And just for dramatic effect, we put the ad break sort of just after the sting.
It was a bee sting cliffhanger.
That's
it.
Amazing. Come back work. After That's the good break. Editing. That's just good editing. That's
Find
good storytelling.
Find out if she lived. Yeah.
Exactly. So we've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with the Telegraph, executive produced by TennisBalls.com with our mascot Rio with a Y. We'll be back after the women's singles final tomorrow. It's been lovely having Matt with us, having Courtney and Catherine. Thank you. Thank you all for listening and for all your very nice messages of support. If you do know anybody who remotely seems interested in tennis while you're watching the tennis with them, just tell them about us. Tell them about the NCR Tennis Podcast as well, because you know, it's not just us, but you know, there's more room for loads of us. And you want to listen to us though, for sure. And we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.